RN, your world unfolding.
G'day there, Julian Morrow with you, and this is Friday Drive on RN. Coming up on the show today, the internet filter that slipped in through the back door. We'll discuss the new way that apparently government agencies are blocking websites, some intentionally and some maybe less so. Plus, on the ground in Syria, it's a nation which probably needs both a doctor and a priest, and we will speak to one of each about their experiences recently in that troubled country. And our Twitterati guest is the first female editor in 150 years of that august journal, The Scientific American. That's all coming up on Friday Drive, but first let's hear some more of our opening track. It's called Cashews, or Cashew, by Harbours. Cruisy opening to the show this evening. That track again, Cashew, by Harbours. Harbours is a 21-year-old Melbourne producer, apparently. That's a debut track straight into the RN Drive charts at number one. It was released only a few days ago, and it's a free download on his SoundCloud page. An EP is due in June. Coming up, of course, after seven in the show, we have question time as well. So for all those avid watchers of the budget speech and budget in reply, we will be quizzing our way through the week's events. Of course, we value your input into the show, and you can do that via SMS, which is 0418 226 576, or on Twitter, our handle is at RN Drive, and mine is at Jules Morrow. But first up now to the question of an internet filter, and for all the debate about the Gillard and Rudd government's plans for an internet filter, there is now growing concern that government bodies are using an existing provision, Section 313 of the Telecommunications Act, as a new form of internet regulation or censorship. It's been revealed that ASIC, the financial and companies regulator, blocked 1,200 websites last month in an attempt to shut down a web scam. Caught up in the crossfire was Melbourne Free University's website, which was hosted at the same IP address as the fraudulent website. Joining me now is the co-founder of that website, Jasmine Westendorf. Good evening, Jasmine.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on.
Look, it's a pleasure. Now, obviously, you were caught up in an attempt by ASIC to shut down a financial scam website. How did you discover that you were part of this kind of IP address driftnet regulation?
Well, we were going about our regular daily business and our site dropped offline. And so we received a number of emails from people saying they weren't able to access our site. Obviously, when that happened, we initially thought it was just a technical glitch, and we spent 5 days on the phone to our host and our internet service provider, who eventually and very reluctantly told us that our site had been blocked by an Australian authority, and even more alarmingly, that they were legally prohibited from giving us any more information about which authority had put the block on our IP address and why.
Right. So a long time on hold trying to get that information out of them. Once you got that information, what did you do and how did you restore your services?
Well, it was very difficult to know what to do because we were completely unable to challenge this through any legal or official channels because we weren't told who was responsible. There was an investigation conducted by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The Greens, Senator Ludlam's office got involved and put some questions to the Attorney General, and there was a real social media outcry. All of that seems to have contributed to the block being lifted 9 days afterwards. But during that time, we still had no answers about who'd put the block on us. ACMA, had denied any responsibility. The Australian Federal Police said it wasn't them, and the Attorney General's office also said it wasn't them, and none of them were able to point us in the direction of who it might have been or who else we could contact about that.
So the discussion today is obviously about this provision of Section 313 of the Telecommunications Act. Has that been actually explicitly cited to you as a reason why your site went down?
We haven't received any direct communications from the government over this. Obviously, Senator Conroy, his office released a statement 2 days ago saying that it was under that actually put this block, and that the Melbourne Free University website was accidentally blocked, and that's what they'd done. They lifted that block. Obviously, there's an issue that it took 6 weeks to get any information about that, and that was despite the efforts of a number of journalists and a number of activists who were trying to figure out what was going on. And it appears to be one of the first times that this 15-year-old legislation is being reinterpreted in this quite novel way that gives ASIC the power to request blocks be put on IP addresses without any real review process or authorisation process for those blocks.
And as a user of an IP service, was it just the case that the block stopped and your service resumed without you being given any explanation of that?
That's correct. So we've had no explanation directly to us.
Okay, all right. Are you looking at your options now to see whether you can challenge the decisions that were made?
Look, we're a free organisation. There's no money involved. If we were a small business, we probably would have lost money through that 9 days offline, but we're not. Our main concern is that this sets a pretty dangerous precedent in Australia for other government bodies to interpret that legislation in the same way and to potentially block other websites without transparency and without accountability and without those websites or individuals having any sort of capacity for recourse. So our main issue at the moment is that the internal decision-making processes are reviewed, and hopefully that the government stops pursuing this sort of internet censorship by stealth, that it becomes sort of a more above-board issue.
Presumably, the main issue, I suppose, is the fact that so many websites were caught up in an attempt to block a scam site. Do you have any issue with internet scam sites being shut down?
Look, I think obviously there are terrible things that happen on the internet, and the government needs to have some ability to respond to that. The discussion has mainly been about sort of the worst porn websites, and in this case, fraud websites. And I understand why the government needs to respond to that, but there are much less clumsy ways of responding to those websites that don't take 1,200 other websites offline in the meantime. And I think it is a pretty big incident of collateral damage when that's happening and when there's no recourse or accountability for it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm no expert in these technical things, but how was it that you and this financial scam website, which I assume you have nothing to do with, shared an IP address?
Websites share IP address all the time. It's really not uncommon. It's very common that there are up to, you know, a few thousand websites on the same IP address. We buy our website hosting through a particular place and we get put on a, you know, on an IP address as a result of that. Obviously, we can't be expected to check, you know, the other 1,200
websites. Yes, that's not something within your control, indeed,
Of course not, no. Yeah. And that's a common thing for most people.
Okay, well, Jasmine Westendorf, thanks very much for joining us on RN Drive this evening.
Thank you, Julian.
It is 18 minutes past six on RN Drive. Julian Morrow with you. Coming up in a moment, we will discuss the very troubling situation in Syria.